one of the things I often say with my students when I'm kind of trying to get them to recognize the danger of their freedoms on the internet is I say to them sometimes, like, your parents often don't realize that when they give you access to the internet, they're giving you access to the whole internet. And they go, yeah, my parents have no idea. It's just like, that's a worrying kind of attitude that our students have. But it's really true. It's amazing how naive so many of our parents are in terms of what their children are accessing.
Welcome back to the Effective Ministry Podcast, the podcast that helps you to have an effective youth and children's ministry in your local church. I'm Tim Bielhartz, a children's ministry advisor for YouthWorks in Sydney. And this week, I've got the second of a two-part conversation with Marshall Ballantyne-Jones and Emma Argyll about the challenges that we face raising children and youth in a porn-saturated world. If you've jumped in fresh here, then pause this episode, go back one and hear the first part of our conversation. But for those who have listened to the first part already, in this episode, both Marshall and Emma will talk about the tools and resources that they've been developing in this space to help young people resist porn and have a positive understanding of sex and relationships. We also chat about the importance of parents and culture setting in our Christian communities. Marshall was particularly keen to call out Christians' acceptance of our sexualized culture and our lack of critique of our pop culture, our TVs and movies, even our own social media posts and feeds, which reinforce the normalization of heightened sexuality. Let's jump back in where we left off. Marshall finished last week talking about how the gospel shapes our approach to porn consumption. And he takes up the topic now of how young people objectify themselves and how we might speak into that tendency from the perspective of a Christian leader.
We want to encourage people not to objectify themselves and nor to objectify each other. And I think we need to, especially if we ever do have discussions on sexuality, we want to, I think, keep the guy and girl divide as best we can and speak to them in an age-appropriate and gender-specific way, because there's a great delineation between the way sexuality affects young boys and young girls, and you can enhance your effectiveness and diminish your risks when you speak to boys and girls and minister to them in the terms which relate to them best.
I think, yes, to all. But I think one of the things that has come up a lot when I've been talking to, so I do a lot of trying to talk to parents and teachers and, you know, people who are in any kind of relationship with young people, whether it's their own children or children they're ministering to. And I think a huge hurdle for people in being able to do this well, so being able to be the dad whose son comes to him and says, I'm struggling with this, and be able to manage that situation in a good way, like, all of us as adults, whether we're parents or youth ministers or whatever, I think have got to work on our ability to, you know, talk about awkward things, you know, the word masturbation, for example, or a whole lot of other words that people don't want to say in polite conversation. I think we've got to work on our ability to have those kind of conversations and talk about those things and communicate about those things in ways that don't immediately communicate to the young people who come to us. They don't want to talk to me about this. They don't want to hear anything about it. Because I think a huge part of us effectively modeling within our families, say, if we're parents with children, or ministering well to our kids, is being able to demonstrate that we really think these conversations are valuable and we really want to have them. And I think so often the way we talk and present just communicates to the students that we don't want it, or the kids we're ministering to, we don't want to talk about it. We're horrified. We're like flustered and embarrassed, and we can't handle it. And I think there's so much that we really need to help ourselves with. And I think a huge part of that is us thinking about ourselves as individuals and our own experience of sexuality, our own things or hang-ups or whatever that we've maybe been raised with. And some of us might find that we actually need to do some real work on ourselves and our own thinking and our own understandings and hang-ups, if that's the right word. The things that make us more inclined to have our hackles raised and feel really uncomfortable and feel really reticent to go into these conversations. Because if we don't address that and get better at just being able to be a relaxed recipient of whatever it is that our own child or somebody might need to talk to us about, we're pretty quickly going to shut those conversations down. They're not going to happen. And I think sometimes it's worth us thinking as adults who are in ministry about what it is that we've received in our own thinking about sexuality. So a couple of things that have come up in a number of conversations I've had with adults that have created problems for them as being people who are trying to talk to young people is they've received really unhelpful ideas about sex. So even particularly when it comes to that kind of question of consent, sometimes the language we use about, you know, even sex within marriage, sometimes the way maybe sermons happen or the way teaching happens around sex within marriage either inadvertently or on purpose communicates maybe to women in a marriage that there's an obligation on them to kind of provide sex to their husbands. And the way that language comes across really eats away at actually what we're trying to uphold and teach our kids about consent and respectful relationships. And those kind of things can create real barriers for us in being able to comfortably sit in a conversation and talk about sex. So I think one of the things I would want to encourage every adult to do for themselves as they think about whether or not they're someone who can chat to a young person, particularly chatting to their own children, because as you say, Marshall, that's where a lot of the most helpful, powerful conversations are going to be. We really want to, you know, think about ourselves in that way and do the work if we need to help us be able to be people who can engage in that kind of communication in a way that doesn't just send our kids running.
People need to upskill. People need to upskill. Yeah, and 100%. You mentioned before, Emma, about Gail Dines, who's an American academic. She's got an awesome website. It's a secular website called Culture Reframed.
Yeah.
And it's got some great resources there for both parents and carers and teachers about how to communicate well about sexuality and pornography especially. So I would encourage churches to know what those resources like Culture Reframed is. Another one is Patricia Wirikern's recent Talking Sex by the Book, which is a recent publication, which is, again, to help parents talk with their kids and engage with their kids about sexuality. These you got to assume that most parents, Christian and non-Christian, aren't very good at this and don't want to do it. And you can bet your bottom dollar no kid wants to talk to their parents about sex, right? But these are conversations which, when done healthily and regularly, will have enormous fruit in the lives of those young people.
I think I feel like when I get a chance to talk about this kind of stuff with my own kids or with students, I feel like it becomes very apparent if you can have a conversation where you're pretty relaxed and you can let them ask their questions or whatever. Kids are desperate for adults to engage with them in this space. They have questions, they have things that they just want wisdom on, but finding the kind of adult that they can enter into that conversation with, I think is really hard to do for them.
So much good advice, guys. That was brilliant. I don't want to miss what Marshall said earlier about the gospel as well, how the gospel speaks into this and shapes our understanding, mm-hmm. you know, that in all of this, even when we're struggling, whether it's our sexual sin, whether it's the discipling those of others, just that reminder that God wants to forgive. He knows us in his weakness. He's paid a price, and that, you know, that is an important part of this conversation. And yet we're also challenging towards godliness and discipleship and growth and maturity in all those as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I would even say, like, if we don't start conversations with our kids in our youth ministry, with our own children, you know, pretty early in their lives in such a way that we have this open dialogue and we have this ability to have these conversations, you know, if kids don't have anyone speaking into their lives about sexuality, about struggles with pornography, I think when things are shrouded in secrecy and mystery, you know, we talk about, you know, whether or not you should lie, you know, all these other kind of ethical things, we kind of raise all these other different topics. But if we don't touch on sex and we don't touch on pornography, we get the impression that, you know, grace is available for all of these other, you know, in all these other areas of your life that you might struggle. But a kid might find themselves struggling most in this area and nobody addresses it with them because nobody wants to say the words masturbation or pornography. And so they're left thinking, okay, well, I'm in the place that, you know, God's grace isn't here for me in this space. And I think when we don't start those conversations, we inadvertently communicate that no, this has to stay shrouded in mystery. This has to stay shrouded in silence, and you can't come and get help because nobody really wants to talk about that stuff. And I think that's a real danger.
Yeah, that's really, really helpful. We've got a couple of links there that you've mentioned. I'll put those in the show notes, the Culture Reframe, Talking Sex by the Book by Patricia Wirikun. I don't want to finish up before, Marshall, you mentioning Resist. This is part of your post-PhD research and some of the ministry you're continuing now. Tell us about the Resist ministry and what its goal is.
Okay, so what I've developed is a fast, effective, 5-session recovery program for people struggling with pornography and other undesirable online behaviors. It's right now, as we speak, in the editing suites being clipped. So come February next year, I understand that everything will be launched and ready to go. And it's a program that will be accessible to all churches and Christian communities. It's a Bible-based, evidence-based program that doesn't just focus on informing, but also equipping people to make change and effective change. So it does tap into that neurological challenge that I spoke of before. It's grace-based. It centers on the gospel of Christ and the affirming of our identity in Jesus as he loves us and gives us an eternal destination and a purpose in life living for him now. So that's something which I hope people down the track will get to use. And on top of that, I also do engage with churches and youth groups around the country and run seminars and talks to help them fast track their thinking and their action and engagement with staff training as well for youth leaders. So something that hopefully could be a resource for some of your listeners.
Wonderful. And Emma, you received a grant recently to develop an online resource, particularly around those ideas of consent and respectful relationships. Is there any update on how that has gone? Anything you want to tell us on that space?
Well, it's interesting. When I initially pitched for that, it was into a place where there wasn't a whole lot of stuff. There's been this proliferation of, stuff to do with consent. It was particularly about consent education at the time. So really what I'm kind of working on at the moment is just like curating these resources and trying to put them in a pretty simple format that can just, be a little database of the kind of resources you might want. Here's a video clip that talks about this thing and it's 2 minutes and you could use it in your PDHP lesson in this way. That's the form it's taking at the moment because, secular and Christian, there's just so much stuff that, I wanted it to be available for people. I was thinking about teachers at the time in schools. But, trying to kind of resource all sorts of people. So that's still a work in progress. But I think if I can just kind of put something out there that's worth, for your youth leaders to be thinking about, I think one of the things that's not really in the conversation at the moment, although obviously it's super relevant to pornography, it's super relevant to what Marshall's been saying, but it's also relevant to kind of the way we talk about sex in general, the way we talk about consent education is this kind of this virtue of self-control, right? We don't really talk about it very much. It's kind of fallen out of favor. Virtue is kind of fallen out of favor, I guess, or a character trait, whatever you want to call it. But I think it's interesting that we spend a lot of time in these consent conversations in secular spaces, talking to kids about, what it might look like to withdraw consent in the middle of a sexual encounter. And what it's going to look like to be respectful in that moment and what it's going to look like to, manage that situation and all that kind of thing. And we're trying to teach kids these incredibly complex, challenging kind of skills, but we're not in any way upholding self-control as something that's like a super essential thing for you to be able to develop if you're ever going to be able to come through with that. And I think one of the things that probably Gen X, a lot of Gen X and older millennials used to hear in youth group is youth leaders may be saying to us, oh, you just have to have self-control for a while and then you'll get married and then you can have as much sex as you want. And just like thinking about how enormously unhelpful that kind of thinking is, because any human being who's been in a relationship with another human being, particularly a marriage relationship, is going to know that there's no version of your reality, no moment in your relationship, especially not in your sexual relationship, that's not going to still involve a great deal of self-control, a great deal of ability to be someone who is not just ruled by your passions or your desires in any given moment. And so I would just like love to throw into this conversation just a challenge or whatever for all of us youth leaders, parents, whatever, just kind of work out ways that we can help our young people value the idea of being self-controlled, recognize how essential that is in so many different facets of our lives, and recognize that that's an essential component of this consent conversation that we're trying to have in all different spaces. And it's so relevant, obviously, to pornography and kids as they kind of navigate their life online.
And it's relevant to being Christian. Virtually every letter in the New Testament has a big punchline, develop self-control.
Yeah, it's one of the fruits of the Spirit. It's right there in the key characteristics of what it means to be Christian.
And biblically, sexuality is one of the major areas where that word self-control is applied to. Mm. So we want to teach that as a fundamental Christian goal. And just following on from Emma, I know this is a really long podcast, but look, not everyone has a problem with porn, but I could tell you most young people have a problem with self-control when it comes to their digital devices, whether it be scrolling through TikTok and Instagram and YouTube Shorts or computer gaming or other online behaviors, binging on Netflix and other shows. Most young people have been training their brains since they got access to their digital devices to be immediate gratifying and not being able to learn, delay gratification, wasting time, being self-indulgent. And when you add to that the characteristics of a lot of people's behaviors online, particularly on social media, which is self-obsessed, self-focused, and covetous of other people, it's just a formula for disastrous Christian maturity. And so we really want to encourage young people, of course, to limit their use of technology and certainly to avoid the development of compulsive behaviors and narcissistic behaviors. But this is something that you leaders have to model as well. And if your conduct and your posts and your behaviors online amongst your friends don't model the message that you're trying to say to the kids and encourage and role model the type of behaviors which are worldly, doesn't matter what you teach on a Friday night, it's going to be a lead balloon and sink in the perspective of those kids, and you're only going to encourage them to emulate those behaviors.
Hmm. Absolutely. I know this is one of your passions, Marshall. We've gone long. We might as well throw in one more tangent, but you've noticed this large indifference and this uncritical adoption of sexualized media, sexualized shows, the normalization of the way that we present ourselves on social media is another area where we are not presenting a positive counterculture to our young people, even as leaders, that we're still, we say, don't watch porn, but we're happy with this Netflix show, which is highly sexualized, graphic sex scenes, whatever it might be. And you've noticed, have you had any reflections on that topic?
Well, yeah, I do think we need to be critical of what we're looking at, engaging and approving of, because we're in a world which is so saturated with these messages and standards around us that we get desensitized, right? We don't get shocked by, flesh anymore, a ripping six pack, a bikini body. And many of us feel in our own hearts and in the way that we fit in culturally and socially with our peers that our status and our acceptance and where our importance lies in other people seeing us as attractive and outwardly appealing. And it might just be the physical, it might be things like success, and it might be achievement, and it might be other elements of characteristics which aren't based on being selfless, servant-hearted, godly, and Christ-like. Mm-hmm. And so we've got to be critical. We've got to be prepared to analyze with our friends in church and our peers and leadership teams our own what we find normal and keep pulling ourselves back from indifference. You may have heard the corny phrase like, what would Jesus say if he was sitting next to you while you're watching this or all that sort of stuff, right? And of course that doesn't happen, but it kind of does happen. That there's a Jesus is with us all the time, as Christians through his Spirit, and his word's with us all the time, which we can study and access. And he teaches us how to love and act and prioritize life. We do need to start being active about questioning our priorities, our accepted norms, and our activities, and keep putting them through the filter of what's godly and desirable to Jesus as he calls us to be his active disciples in the year 2023 and onwards.
And I think even what it looks like to be a reader amongst, you know, like a book nerd amongst teenage girls at the moment, thanks to, you know, TikTok and BookTok and whatever, is this kind of, they've got often very cutesy covers. They're often like quite brightly coloured covers, pastel novels with like a guy and a girl fully dressed looking quite innocent on the front of these novels. But, you know, wow, the stuff that a lot of kind of 14, 15, 16-year-old kids are reading, they're often described as like spicy romance, by which they mean like just constant explicit sex scenes throughout the novel. So, you know, I will see my, you know, teenage students reading and just, yeah, be aware that what the content of those novels are is, you know, pretty full on. And I think most parents would not look, or youth leaders would not look at the covers of these novels and have any sense of what they contain. And look, on the one level, sometimes I think, gosh, as a contrast to pornography novels where characters get to be, you know, more fully human and often it's kind of presented from the female gaze or whatever, sometimes maybe that's a better alternative, but it's still not that helpful. I think it, you know, I think a lot of people would not be aware that so many of these things that kids are reading are just full on. And I think that's worth thinking about. But another thing that's worth thinking about is just, you know, parental opportunities to engage with this stuff. A while ago, there was like the government thought about whether or not we should put in place age verification controls for kids to access pornography. And various people made submissions in the hope that that would come through. It didn't, because in the same way as when you have to verify your age to buy alcohol or gamble online, you know, you need a proof of age kind of thing. There's a privacy issue there. And you know, the proliferation of pornography has really thrived on anonymity on the internet. Yeah. And so therefore people really arced up about the idea of having to prove identity when accessing pornography. And so privacy was upheld. And so the parents were left with that onus put on them to kind of, you know, put their own controls in place in terms of digital media use. So when it comes to us thinking about how we help our kids manage their digital lives, part of that is recognizing that, you know, one of the things I often say with my students when I'm kind of trying to get them to recognize the danger of their freedoms on the internet, as I say to them sometimes, like, your parents often don't realize that when they give you access to the internet, they're giving you access to the whole internet. And they go, yeah, my parents have no idea. It's just like, that's a worrying kind of attitude that our students have. But it's really true. It's amazing how naive so many of our parents are in terms of what their children are accessing so easily on the internet. And, you know, it's a murky, there's lots of wonderful things on the internet, but it's a very murky world as well. And so, you know, when we grew up, the you know, TV channels, they only played certain shows at certain times when kids were watching, and certain things weren't allowed to be advertised. And, you know, a lot of that gatekeeping was done for parents by, you know, whatever the rules were for those four channels that we had, if we're Gen X. But now, you know, kids can be accessing media in every, you know, in all of these different kinds of places. How would you even know? If your kid's on YouTube, doesn't take long for them to be encountering something that you don't want them to encounter. I think somehow people are naive about that. So, you know, encourage your youth leaders to get in touch with your parents and help them to kind of think through, what does it mean for me to be responsible adult raising children who need to get to stay kids if they're going to be able to, you know, get into their teenage years without a fully blown pornography problem before they've even hit puberty.
Thank you so much, guys. This has been a wide ranging interview. So many intersecting topics on this and just different avenues we go down. I've still got more questions that I haven't even asked, but I think you've been very generous with your time. Really, really thankful for you. I'm thankful for your work in this space. Thankful for Marshall, your research, and Emma for your engagement with your students. I think you're leading by example how you can have these key conversations with young people. And as Marshall reminded us as well, in partnership with parents is going to be really key as well, particularly as most of us coming from a parish context, as you talk with families, do it in context with households, make sure that they're aware of what's going on. Thank you so much for your time, guys. I've really appreciated this.
Thanks.
I'm sure it's going to be very helpful for many people. Cheers.
Thank you.
Thank you.
The Effective Ministry Podcast is a production of Youth Works in Sydney. We want to see effective youth and children's ministry in every church. And one of the ways that you can help us do that is by letting people know about this podcast in all the usual ways, like, comment, share, and review on your favorite social media and podcasting platform. If you've got comments, thoughts, or questions for this podcast, you can email us at effectiveministrypodcast@youthworks.net. And also check out youthworks.net for other ways that YouthWorks can help you have an effective youth and children's ministry in your church.